At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi guys, welcome to Textory. It is summer, at least in the northern hemisphere, and I am officially boiling. It is so hot, and originally I wanted to incorporate a summer-themed text in today's episode, but you know what? We're gonna do completely the opposite. We're going to go Arctic to remind ourselves how good we have it right now, not having to deal with our toes freezing off. So this is probably the first text that we focus on that features no women. We usually focus on female-themed texts. This one was written by a guy, but he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner and he married a female skier, so I think he gets a pass. Today we are time traveling to the cruel and unforgiving north of the late 19th century. We will be reading diary entries by Fridtjof Nansen, who was a Norwegian explorer. I mean, he did many things. He was also a politician, he was a scientist, he did all. But today we're focusing on his career as a polar explorer. Why does it sound like Dora the Explorer? I don't know. In late 19th century, there were several expeditions attempting to reach the North Pole. It was basically like a race, seeing which country will be able to do it first. And unfortunately, due to a lack of research, due to harsh conditions, due to technical mistakes, a lot of these expeditions ended in a tragedy. And one crucial element that often failed was basically the ships that were chosen for the expeditions. So a little bit of physics here. Your girl has taken physics class. The last time I did it was probably 16. But basically, if you were traveling in the freezing water of the Arctic, you wouldn't just sail right through it. In the winter months, in the colder months, from around October to late spring, the sea basically froze and the ice pushed onto your ship. And that was the case with so many expeditions where the ships just couldn't take the pressure, like me sometimes. The ships couldn't take the pressure of the ice. And that was the case for the Jeannette expedition, when the ship ended up being crushed by the ice in 1881. The Varna ship was crushed in 1882. The Bjerling-Kalstenius expedition ended up being shipwrecked as well, not by the ice, but some other factors. But basically, the ship seemed to be the weak point in all these expeditions. Nansen had already had experience in polar expeditions when he was preparing for his North Pole attempt. He was the first person to cross Greenland, and he did so on skis, which I think is pretty badass. There could be much said about Nansen's skills and intelligence, but one thing that I personally think is noteworthy was that he seemed to have been a humble guy. Like, he was a chill dude. You know, he had nothing of that toxic masculinity. He was not underestimating the forces of nature. He was not like, yeah, let's go, guys, let's do it. His biggest strength was preparation. He was like, the more time I spend on preparing the trip, the bigger the chance there would be of it succeeding. Other explorers were so obsessed with the idea of reaching the North Pole first that they allowed many mistakes, and Nansen would rather spend months and even years planning the journey. So the first time he actually seriously thought about attempting to reach the North Pole was when the debris from the Jeannette ship that I just mentioned, that ship sunk north of the Siberian coast, but the debris was found in Greenland 3 years later. So scientists started arguing that there must be an east to west current in the Arctic Sea, because otherwise, how would artifacts that were clearly from the Jeannette ship. Like, they contained the names of the Jeannette crew members. There were documents. How would those things make it to Greenland if it's so far off from where Jeannette sank? Nansen was in favor of the current theory. He agreed with that, and he came up with a plan. So he wanted to get the ship east of Norway to the Siberian coast where Jeannette sank. He would plow through the ice as far north as possible, and then he would allow for the ship to be carried to the North Pole by the current, and then probably further west to Greenland. So again, the only weak point of this plan was the ship. Similarly to me in social situations, none of the ships could so far deal with the pressure. And Nansen knew how important the ship would be and how crucial it would be, not only for the potential success, but also to the survival of the crew. Because every time the ships got crushed before, it wasn't a sudden crash. It wasn't like the Titanic submarine. It was a gradual process, but the crew was still left without the ship in the middle of nowhere. So he knew that this would be crucial to his people basically making it. And he found an unusual solution to this problem. So because the pressure of the freezing ice damaged the ships, he wanted to construct a ship that would sort of get pushed up by the ice, so it would float on top of the ice. So he commissioned a shipwright, Colin Archer, and that's how Fram, which means forward in Norwegian, was constructed. And if you look up the photos of Fram, it looks a little round and a little chunky. And it was this round shape that was supposed to help sustain the ice pressure. Now, whether it succeeded or not, without further ado, let's read Nansen's diaries and we'll find out. Monday, October 9th. All at once in the afternoon, as we were sitting idly chattering, a deafening noise began, and the whole ship shook. This was the first ice pressure. Everyone rushed on deck to look. The Fram behaved beautifully, as I had expected she would. On pushed the ice with steady pressure, but down under us it had to go, and we were slowly lifted up. These squeezings continued off and on all the afternoon, and were sometimes so strong that the Fram was lifted several feet, but then the ice could no longer bear her, and she broke it below her. There seems to be a good deal of movement in the ice here. Peter has just been telling us that he hears the dull booming of strong pressures not far off. Tuesday, October the 10th. The ice continues disturbed. The ice is restless and has pressed a good deal today again. It begins with a gentle crack and moan along the side of the ship, which gradually sounds louder in every key. Now it is a high plaintive tone. Now it is a grumble, now it is a snarl, and the ship gives a start up. The noise steadily grows till it is like all the pipes of an organ. The ship trembles and shakes and rises by fits and starts, or is sometimes gently lifted. There is a pleasant, comfortable feeling in sitting listening to all this uproar and knowing the strength of our ship. Many a one would have been crushed long ago. But outside, the ice is ground against our ship's sides, the piles of broken up floe are forced under the heavy, invulnerable hull, and we lie as if in a bed. Soon the noise begins to die down, the ship sinks into its old position again, and presently all is silent as before. In several places round us, the ice is piled up, one spot to a considerable height. Towards evening there was a slackening, and we lay again in a large open pool. I cannot imagine the absolute anxiety I would have felt, not only because of all the sounds that the ice would have been making, but knowing that my idea is being put to the test. Like, just knowing that no one has ever sailed this ship before in those circumstances, and that the only guarantee we have of our safety, like me and my crew, is basically what I came up with. This dude definitely does not have imposter syndrome, that's for sure. Friday, October the 13th. Oh, Friday the 13th, dude. Now we are in the very midst of what the prophets would have had us dread so much. The ice is pressing and packing round us with a noise like thunder. It is piling itself up into long walls and heaps high enough to reach a good way up the Fram's rigging. In fact, it is trying its very utmost to grind the Fram into powder. But here we sit quite tranquil, not even going up to look at all the hurly-burly, but just chatting and laughing as usual. That is so sweet because there is a lot of reports in the diary about just their daily lives, and it's just so normal. They were playing games, they were chatting, they were smoking, it was just a group of guys, a group of dudes in incredibly harsh conditions, but inside the ship it was quite warm, it was quite comfy, and they were just like, yeah, you know, it is what it is. As long as we're all healthy and we're all surviving, let's just stick to the humanity that we have left. And I think that's incredible. Last night, there was tremendous pressure around our old dog Flo. Just a little bit of background here. Basically, the core of Nansen's Fram expedition was the dogs. He took a lot of dogs with him. They also had a lot of animals on board to, well, basically get food. The dogs were mostly for transport and company as well. And if they were stuck in ice, the dogs would usually be stationed outside. Those were the Samoyed dogs, so they were quite safe out there. And the dogs were also sort of guards to the whole encampment because they would spot polar bears and any other predators from afar. The ice had towered up higher than the highest point of the floe and hustled down upon it. It had quite spoiled a well where we till now had found good drinking water, filling it with brine. Furthermore, it had cast itself over our stern ice anchor and part of the steel cable which held it, burying them so effectually that we had afterwards to cut the cable. Then it covered our planks and sledges, which stood on the ice. Before long, the dogs were in danger, and the watch had to turn out all hands to save them. At last, the floe split in two. So they basically had to take the dogs back on board. If I remember correctly, there were about 30 dogs on board initially. I might be lying. This morning, the ice was one scene of melancholy confusion, gleaming in the most glorious sunshine. Piled up all around us were high, steep ice walls. Strangely enough, we had lain on the very verge of the worst confusion and had escaped with the loss of an ice anchor, a piece of steel cable, a few planks and other bits of wood, and half of a Samoyed sledge, all of which might have been saved if we had looked after them in time. But the men have grown so indifferent to the pressure now that they do not even go up to look, let it thunder ever so hard. They feel that the ship can stand it, and so long as that is the case, there is nothing to hurt except the ice itself. So basically they were chilling so hard in the comfy Fram interiors that they did not notice losing some of the equipment that they left outside. In the morning, the pressure slackened again, and we were soon lying in a large piece of open water, as we did yesterday. Today again, this stretched far away towards the northern horizon, where the dark atmosphere indicated some extent of open water. I now give the order to put the engine together again. They told me it could be done in a day and a half, or at most 2 days. We must go north and see what there is up there. I think it possible that it may be the boundary between the ice drift that Jeanette was in and the pack we are now drifting south with, or can it be land? So despite all this ice pressure and the sea basically freezing up for the winter, he was still determined to make it as far north as he can. Wednesday, October 25th. We had a horrible pressure last night. I awoke and felt the Fram being lifted, shaken, and tossed about, and heard the loud cracking of the ice breaking against her sides. After listening for a little while, I fell asleep again, with a snug feeling that it was good to be on board the Fram. it would be confoundedly uncomfortable to have to be ready to turn out every time there was a little pressure, or to have to go off with our bundles on our backs like the Tegetthoff people. He is referring to the Tegetthoff expedition, which did basically come down to constantly having to evacuate the ship and then going back there and then evacuating and having all your stuff with you. And then eventually it was a failure. It is quickly getting darker. The sun stands lower and lower every time we see it. Soon it will disappear altogether if it has not done so already. The long, dark winter is upon us, and glad shall we be to see the spring. But nothing matters much if we could only begin to move north. There is now southwesterly wind, and the windmill, which has been ready for several days, has been tried at last and works splendidly. We have beautiful electric light today, though the wind has not been especially strong. Electric lamps are a grand institution. I do agree with you, my guy. What a strong influence light has on one's spirits. There was a noticeable brightening up at the dinner table today. The light acted on our spirits like a draught of good wine. And how festive the saloon looks. We felt it quite a great occasion, drank Oscar Dixon's health, and voted him the best of good fellows. Oscar Dixon was a Swedish merchant that basically sponsored the Fram expedition. Thursday, October the 26th. We are moving quickly north, due north, says Peter. It does look as if things were going better. Great celebration of the day, beginning with target shooting. Then we had a splendid dinner of four courses, which put our digestive apparatus to a severe test. The Fram's health was drunk amidst great and stormy applause. The proposer's words were echoed by all hearts when he said that she was such an excellent ship for our purpose that we could not imagine a better. Great applause. And we therefore wished her and ourselves with her long life. Hear, hear. After supper came strawberry and lemon punch, and prizes were presented with much ceremony and a good deal of fun, all being taken off in turn in suitable mottos, for the most part composed by the ship's doctor. There was a prize for each man. The first prize taker was awarded the wooden cross of the Order of the Fram, to wear suspended from his neck by a ribbon of white tape. The last received a mirror in which to see his fallen greatness. Smoking in the saloon was allowed this evening, so now pipes, toddy, and an animated game of whist ended a bright and successful holiday. That is so cute, but also it's so surreal to imagine them being stuck in the darkness in the Arctic waters, so far away from everyone that they would never even be found, and they're just stuck inside a tiny wooden ship, and they're drinking strawberry and lemon punch and playing games. It's insane, actually. But it also brings me such comfort knowing that humans will be humans, and humans, even the rough explorers they are, will always appreciate good fun. Now, this is a very touching moment in the diary because Nansen basically reminisces his wife and is like, well, it kind of sucks to do this long distance thing, guys. So here's what he says. Sitting here now alone, my thoughts involuntarily turn to the year that has gone since we stood up there on the platform, and she threw the champagne against the bow, saying, Fram is your name. And the strong, heavy hull began to glide so gently. I held her hand tight. The tears came into eyes and throat, and one could not get out a word. The sturdy hull dived into the glittering water. A sunny haze lay over the whole picture. Never shall I forget the moment we stood there together, looking out over the scene. And to think of all that has happened these four last months, separated by sea and land and ice, coming years too lying between us, it is all just the continuation of what happened that day. But how long is it to last? I have such difficulty in feeling that I am not to see home again soon. When I begin to reflect, I know that it may be long, but I will not believe it. Thursday, November the 2nd. The temperature keeps at about minus 22 Fahrenheit below zero. That is minus 30 Celsius. But it does not feel very cold. The air is so still. We can see the aurora borealis in the daytime too. I saw a very remarkable display of it about 3 this afternoon. On the southwestern horizon lay the glow of the sun. In front of it, light clouds were swept together, like a cloud of dust rising above a distant troop of riders. Then, dark streamers of gauze seemed to stretch from the dust cloud up over the sky, as if it came from the sun, or perhaps rather as if the sun were sucking it into itself from the whole sky. It was only in the southwest that these streamers were dark. A little higher up, farther from the sun glow, they grew white and shining, like fine glistening silver gauze. They spread over the vault of heaven above us and right away towards the north. I stood long looking at them. One thing that you can say undoubtedly about Nansen was he loved the north. He was obsessed with the north. He loved the sea, he loved nature. And I think that's what I find relatable about him, was just how astonished he is by the nature that he witnesses. But then he's also going through it because he's not getting any closer to the North Pole and he begins doubting himself. Here I sit in the still winter night on the drifting ice floe and see only stars above me. Far off I see the threads of life twisting themselves into the intricate web, which stretches unbroken from life's sweet morning dawn to the eternal death stillness of the ice. Thought follows thought. You pick the whole to pieces and it seems so small, but high above all towers one form. Why did you take this voyage? Could I do otherwise? Can the river arrest its course and run uphill? My plan has come to nothing. That palace of theory which I reared in pride and self-confidence, high above all silly objections, has fallen like a house of cards at the first breath of wind. Build up the most ingenious theories and you may be sure of one thing. That fact will defy them all. Was I so very sure? Yes, at times, but that was self-deception. Intoxication. A secret doubt lurked behind all the reasoning. It seemed as though the longer I defended my theory, the nearer I came to doubting it. But no, there is no getting over the evidence of that Siberian driftwood. But if, after all, we are on the wrong track, what then? Only disappointed human hopes, nothing more. And even if we perish, what will it matter in the endless cycles of eternity? I started laughing because it reminds me of that one meme where like something happens or you complain about something and then the camera like zooms out and the text says, does it really matter? And then you keep zooming out until you're in space. Like you see the whole Earth, then you see other planets, then you see other galaxies. And that's basically what he's saying here. The Fram is a warm, cozy abode. Whether the thermometer stands at 22 above zero or at 22 below it, we have no fire in the stove. The ventilation is excellent, especially since we rigged up the air sail, which sends a whole winter's cold in through the ventilator. Yet in spite of this, we sit here warm and comfortable with only a lamp burning. I am thinking of having the stove removed altogether. It is only in the way. At least as far as our protection from the winter cold is concerned, my calculations have turned out well. Neither do we suffer much from damp. It does collect and drop a little from the roof in one or two places, especially astern in the foreman cabins, but nothing in comparison to what is common in other ships. And if we lighted the stove, it would disappear altogether. When I have burned a lamp for quite a short time in my cabin, every trace of damp is gone. These are extraordinary fellows for standing the cold. With the thermometer at 22 below zero, Benson goes up in his shirt and trousers to read the thermometer on deck. Tuesday, November the 28th. The disappointment lost no time in coming. There had been a mistake either in the observation or in Hansen's calculations. The soundings today showed 142 meters of water. The soundings basically found out how deep the water was, or about the same as yesterday, and the sounding line indicated a southwesterly drift. However anxious one is to take things philosophically, one can't help feeling a little depressed. I try to find solace in a book, absorb myself in the learning of the Indians, their happy faith in transcendental powers, in the supernatural faculties of the soul, and in a future life. Oh, if one could only get hold of a little supernatural power now and oblige the winds always to blow from the south. It's really sweet how they were stuck in the middle of nowhere and he was like, yeah, I'm studying Indian spiritualism now. Because it does sound very modern. Thursday, November the 30th. The lead showed a depth of exactly 170 meters today, and it seemed by the line as if we were drifting northwest. We are almost certainly further north now. Hopes are rising and life is looking brighter again. My spirits are like a pendulum. If one could imagine such an instrument giving all sorts of irregular swings backward and forward, try having a menstrual cycle. It is no good trying to take the thing philosophically. I cannot deny that the question whether we are to return successful or unsuccessful affects me very deeply. It is quite easy to convince myself with the most inconvertible reasoning that what really matters is to carry through the expedition, whether successfully or not, and get safe home again. I could not but undertake it, for my plan was one that I felt must succeed, and therefore it was my duty to try it. Well, if it does not succeed, is that my affair? I have done my duty, done all that could be done, and can return home with an easy conscience to the quiet happiness I have left behind. What can it matter whether chance, or whatever name you like to give it, does or does not allow the plan to succeed and make our names immortal? The worth of the plan is the same, whether chance smiles or frowns upon it. And as to immortality, happiness is all we want, and that is not to be had here. I can say all this to myself 1,000 times. I can bring myself to believe honestly that it is all a matter of indifference to me. But nonetheless, my spirits change like the clouds of heaven, according as the wind blows from this direction or from that. Or the soundings show the depth to be increasing or not, or the observations indicate a northerly or southerly drift. When I think of the many that trust us, think of Norway, think of all the friends that gave us their time, their faith, and their money, the wish comes that they may not be disappointed. And I grow somber when our progress is not what we expected it would be. And she that gave most, does she deserve that her sacrifice should have been made in vain? He's referring to his wife. Ah, yes, we must and will succeed. So he did feel immense pressure, ha ha ha, like the ship, for the expedition to be successful because he convinced everyone that his idea was going to work. He got the money, he got the permission, he gathered people, and he felt like if they did not succeed, everyone would just be thoroughly disappointed and would just not believe his ideas anymore. And then there was the pressure of his wife who was left behind, and if it wasn't successful, what was she waiting for? So he definitely did feel like it was either that or else what's the point? Sunday, December the 10th. Another peaceful Sunday. The motto for the day in the English almanac is, "He is happy whose circumstances suit his temper, but he is more excellent who can suit his temper to any circumstances." Very true, and exactly the philosophy I am practicing at this moment. I am lying on my berth in the light of an electric lamp, eating cake and drinking beer while I am writing my journal. Presently, I shall take a book and settle down to read and sleep. The arc lamp has shone like a sun today over a happy company. We have no difficulty now in distinguishing hearts from diamonds on our dirty cards. It is wonderful what an effect light has. I believe I am becoming a fire worshipper. It is strange enough that fire worship should not exist in the Arctic countries. For the sons of men, fire is the best and the sight of the sun. A newspaper appears on board now. Framsia. News of or outlook from the Fram is its name, and our doctor is its irresponsible editor. The first number was read aloud this evening and gave occasion for much merriment. Nothing makes me more happy than people doing stupid things in serious circumstances throughout history. Like knowing that those brave men were fighting off polar bears one day, and then the other day they made their own newspaper because they were so bored. I love humans so much. And the editor of the newspaper, so the doctor, he wrote a poem about the whole experience for the newspaper, and it goes like this. Far in the ice there lies a ship, boys. Mast and sail, ice to the very tip, boys. But perfectly clear, if you listen, you can hear, there is life and fun on board that ship, boys. What can it be? Come along and see. It is Nansen and his men that laugh, boys. Nothing to be heard at night but glasses clink, boys, full of greasy cards and counters chink, boys, if he won't declare. It is getting late and the stars won't wait. You and I must up and out alone, boys. The doctor here on board has naught to do, boys. Not a man to test his skill among the crew, boys. Well, may he look blue, there is naught for him to do when every man is strong and hearty too, boys. Now on the Fram, boys, he says, I am, boys, chief editor of newspaper for you, boys. We're gonna end this here because it's so cute. And I just can't get over the fact that it was basically a rubbish poem. If you are curious about how the whole expedition ended, then I have good news and bad news. The bad news is that they never made it to the North Pole, but the good news is that they all survived. Based on how slow they were moving on, Nansen calculated that it might take them even 5 years to reach the pole. So he was like, I ain't got time for that. And he decided that he and one companion would leave the ship and try reaching the pole on their own. In 1895, as they were preparing for that journey, for the last leg of the journey, the ship started shaking so badly that they thought for sure it's gonna break. So they disembarked the ship and they were low-key expecting the ship to get crushed. But instead, the pressure just went away and the crew could go back on board. In spring, Nansen and Johansen from his crew started the march to the North Pole. They had a lot of mishaps, they had a lot of close calls, and they never made it to the North Pole again. But because of Nansen's good thinking, because of how well prepared they were, they constructed a hut, basically, to survive the winter, which I think is incredible. Those two men lived in that hut for 8 months, all alone, with like barely any supplies. They lived off of bear, walrus, seal. They actually gained weight during that time, which I think is incredible. And then they accidentally, which I think is also like, what are the odds? They accidentally met someone. They met Frederick Jackson, who was also a polar explorer and who wanted to go with Nansen, but he was rejected. So he organized his own expedition. So they were kind of saved by Jackson and his men, and they were eventually rescued. In the meantime, Fram was slowly drifting back home, and it made it safely to Norway. So everyone safely got home, everyone survived the journey, and that itself was a tremendous success. And the discoveries that they made during the trip really helped Arctic geography develop. So even though they did not make it to the North Pole, they did prove the polar drift theory because they were drifting, it was just very slow. They gathered a lot of scientific data that would also help future scientists. So all in all, it was a fail, but it was a success. And now the coolest part is that Fram survived to this very day, and you can actually see it in Oslo. There is a very cool Fram museum built around the ship. You can walk the ship yourself, you can walk in their quarters, and I personally found it to be such a fascinating little museum because you could basically be in the rooms where they spent so many times and so many anxious moments. So if you're ever in Oslo, definitely check that museum out. And it is also not very expensive from what I remember, so it's definitely worth a visit. But basically, this whole story to me is a testimony to what it means to be well prepared for something, and that sometimes, even though you really want to just go and do it, it's better to spend more time thinking it through and planning. And that is something that I do intend to use in my daily life. So anyway, hope you enjoyed this episode. I personally feel a lot more cooler now, like cooler as in I'm actually cold. So it worked. It worked. Feel free to read more of Nansen's diaries because they're available via Gutenberg whenever he gets to you. Thanks for listening, and I'll hear you in another episode. Bye.